From a dominant individual to a dominant side of the Atlantic, Musings on Golf roars into September with talk of Scotty and the Walker Cup, along with my dear friend, the Dean Jenna Self, our executive producer. I'm Kelly Elden, welcoming you back to our weekly get-together. And in a couple of minutes, we will welcome in Nathan Smith, who this week is captaining the United States team at the Walker Cup in Ireland, looking to defeat Great Britain and Ireland for the second time in 2 years and for the 41st time in 51 Walker Cup matches. First up, and for good reason, is the world number one. You know, folks, at the start of 2022, the name Scotty Scheffler was not well known in large golf circles. Yes, we knew him because he had been selected as a captain's pick by Steve Stricker for the 2021 U.S. Ryder Cup team, even though he had never won on the PGA Tour to that point. He certainly made Stricker look smart. Scotty went 2-0-1 in his three matches, including a 4-3 win over Jon Rahm at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin as the U.S. reclaimed the Ryder Cup. Do we ever know of Scotty Scheffler today? And we know of him because of an incredible stretch of golf that began with his victory in February of 2022 at the WM Phoenix Open and stretched all the way to this past Sunday when he captured his 22nd PGA Tour event at the Tour Championship in Atlanta. Along the way, Scotty Scheffler has collected two green jackets as the Masters champion, plus the 2025 PGA Championship, and that same year, the Open Championship. The final round on Sunday, he wasn't in the lead. In fact, Scheffler was three shots back of Victor Hovland, who had just come off a terrific round on Saturday. But Scheffler had shot 66 on Saturday. And then he went out and shot 66 birdies early on to really make put a real stake in the ground. And while Hovland had some chances, he had three birdie putts that he left on the low side, meaning he just didn't hit them hard enough in right-to-left breakers. Didn't make them, ended up not winning for the first time, by the way, since Victor has held the 54-hole lead in a PGA Tour event. But what that all added up to was Scotty Scheffler joining Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy as the only players to win multiple FedEx Cup titles. Before long, he will be named the PGA Tour Player of the Year for the fifth straight time. And with a $10 million payday he enjoyed at East Lake, he has passed Tiger Woods on the PGA Tour's all-time money list with official earnings of $130 million compared to Tiger's paltry, it's a shame, $120 million. It was an interesting season, wasn't it, for Scotty Scheffler? It wasn't all great, certainly by his standards. In fact, yes, he won three times. He started with a four-shot victory at the American Express in California, closed it out with a win at East Lake. It was his second win in 3 weeks. He won the FedEx St. Jude Championship in Memphis. But he had two playoff losses, and those two playoff losses were among his five second-place finishes. He had 10 top five finishes. He didn't win a major championship. And yes, when it was all over, when the official FedEx Cup season ended, Scotty Scheffler was at the top. And from this clip, you'll get, a better understanding of Scheffler's commitment to what he calls the battle. And also, very simply, to showing up every day, that every time he tees it up, no matter the event, whether it's a major event, a FedEx Cup event, or a regular weekly PGA Tour event, he's going to give it his all.
Playing tournament golf, I think, is a battle as a whole. You know, I think that's part of why I love it, too. I get to play against the course myself. You know, you have to learn how to handle your emotions, handle pressure. not take days off. That's something I'm very proud of. I feel like I hold myself to a high standard, which I think sometimes can be good and bad. You know, I feel like at times, you know, I probably could be a bit of a pain to be around when things aren't going the way I should, but I don't feel like I take days off. I'm highly competitive, and you know, I'm very proud of being able to have the consistent results that I've had over the years. I feel like it's something that's very difficult to do, and it's something that I'm very proud of. You know, I don't take tournaments off. I don't take days off during tournaments. I try to give it my all each and every day. I feel like, you know, it's a gift to play out here on the PGA Tour, and I don't want to take it for granted. I don't want to look back at the end of my career and feel like I could have done more in order to play well. I want to be able to tell myself when I hang it up that I did everything that I could.
In other words, Scottie Scheffler is a champion of the highest order, and the respect that I know his peers have for him, and that he has, as you heard in that clip, for the game, to always give it your best. And while Scheffler is not necessarily the great character of golf, if you will, he's just so focused on his game, and you don't see a lot of an animated side to him. He is just he's one of the great players of all time. I mean, you don't win 22 wins in 5 years. It may not be Tiger-esque, but it's pretty darn close. By the way, Scottie Scheffler played in the 2017 Walker Cup that was contested at Los Angeles Country Club. Why am I bringing that up? Well, our guest today, Nathan Smith, who won the U.S. Mid-Amateur 4 times, the U.S. Mid-Amateur is for amateur golfers who have to be at least age 25. Nathan Smith this week gets to be the captain of the U.S. Walker Cup team for the second consecutive year. The Walker Cup is the preeminent event in amateur golf. It dates back to 1922 at National Golf Links in Southampton, New York. The U.S. defeated a team from Great Britain and Ireland, and the records since have been very much along those lines. Of the 50 Walker Cups contested, the U.S. has won 40 of them. They've lost 9 times, and there's been one tie. The U.S. is on a string now of having won 5 straight, including the 17-9 win at Cypress Point out in California last year. That team, by the way, included Jackson Coithen, who won on the PGA Tour this summer. So you get a sense of how good those players are. For Nathan Smith, what an incredible honor. And what an incredible story. Nathan Smith played Division III golf at Allegheny College. He's a Pittsburgh guy and very proud of where he grew up, and just became a tremendous player. Played on the Walker Cup 3 times, winning twice. And interestingly enough, the Walker Cup, like the Ryder Cup, is typically played every other year. Well, they're playing in back-to-back years this time because the United States Golf Association and the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews, which runs the Walker Cup on that side of the Atlantic, have decided to shift the competition to even years beginning this week to avoid scheduling issues with the World Amateur Team Championships, which is another big-time amateur event. You can watch it all, by the way, on Golf Channel live starting Saturday at 3:30 a.m. Eastern with the morning foursomes from Lahinch Golf Club. What a golf course that is, in Ireland, all the way through to the end of play on Saturday. There are 4 morning foursome matches on Saturday and then 8 singles matches. And then the same thing starting at 3 a.m. Eastern on Sunday with 4 foursome matches and then all 10 singles matches. And that the 10th singles matches, that's where the U.S. looked to be so strong last year at Cypress Point. The U.S. won 8.5 out of a possible 10 points and made Nathan Smith's job a lot easier. You're going to learn a lot about him. He has great respect, by the way, and he should, for the Great Britain and Ireland team. This team has 6 of the players back from last year, including Jack Whaley from England, the senior at Florida State University. Whaley just won the U.S. Amateur Championship at Marion Golf Club. Stuart Grahan, who won the British Amateur. But the U.S. is also very good. Stuart Hagestad, who is the true veteran of that team. This will be his 6th Walker Cup. Jay Leng Jr. Playing at Stanford. He was the runner-up at the U.S. Amateur recently. And 17-year-old Miles Russell, The left-hander, who tied for 39th at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills earlier this year, Miles has verbally committed to attend Florida State in 2027. And it's a big deal, the Walker Cup over there. 8,000 fans expected to attend each day. The tickets sold out quickly. Amateur golf in Great Britain and Ireland, it's a massive deal. And Lahinch, as I mentioned, just a stellar golf course. Should be a great 2 days. And one of the things I talked about was because, you know, you look at the Ryder Cup as is 3 days of competition, and the upcoming President's Cup is 4 days. This is just 2 days. They got to get right to it. And Nathan talks a little bit about that, of needing to get out to a good start, which I expect his guys will do better this year than they did last year in the foursomes. But I think over the course of the 2 days, the U.S. will prevail. Remember to please follow and like Musings on Golf on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you enjoy your favorite podcasts. And right after these words from our corporate partner, the Friars Golf Club, you'll hear from 2026 United States Walker Cup captain, Nathan Smith. Is your golf life stuck in a bunker of country club hassles? Tired of the wait lists and the six-figure initiation fees? Well, at the Friars Golf Club, we take care of all of the hard work. Planning exclusive trips and unforgettable rounds on top-rated courses, so all you have to do is show up, have fun, and make lifelong friendships on the first tee, the 19th hole, and far beyond. Our terrific 2026 lineup includes international destinations like Dubai and Scandinavia, plus top domestic resorts such as Sand Valley and Black Desert, and access to some great private clubs. Join the Friars Golf Club today. Email us at info@thefriars.com, the word musings in the subject line, to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. We invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience with the Friars Golf Club. Well, 1 year after his charges dominated the 10-man squad from Great Britain and Ireland in the 50th Walker Cup at Cypress Point Club in Northern California, our special guest today returns as U.S. captain as the American 10 are in Ireland this week looking to win its sixth consecutive Walker Cup at the renowned Lahinch Golf Club. Four times he captured the U.S. mid-amateur. No one else has ever done that. Including two in a row and back-to-back wins is the goal this Saturday and Sunday for the Pride of Brookville, Pennsylvania. Nathan Smith, captain, welcome to Musings on Golf. First question, how are you feeling about this week heading into play what is a very formidable group with the Great Britain and Ireland team on their home turf?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. Love the show. And it's great to connect with you again and everything. But well, we're feeling good. We've got our hands full, as you said. I think that's going to be a big ask going over there to Ireland with an incredible crowd, and just knowing the squad that they have, I think it's really one of their best teams in years that I've seen. You know, anytime you can start to see guys that I think their team where they control the U.S. amateur and British amateur, you start to see some of these guys win both of them, and they've got a very deep team. So it's going to be a big ask. So we know I have our hands full, and we're trying to get all packed up right now and head over.
Yeah, you mentioned Jack Whaley, who won the U.S. amateur just a week or so ago at Marion. And also, is it Stuart Graham? Is that how you pronounce it? Who won the British Am? So yeah, that's a strong team that you've got going against.
You know, it's interesting, probably, you know, and Dean probably went through the same thing, but it's interesting where you get a year, and usually after 2 years, guys kind of cycle in and out, and there's a new group. But it's interesting where we have some of the guys returning, and, you know, we have some new guys. And I feel like, you know, a lot of these guys that, you know, made the team, I feel like I kind of already knew them because they were kind of on the scene last year and almost made the team last year. So I'm very familiar with their games and know them. And it's interesting, rather than, let's say, a 2 year marathon, then all of a sudden it's really like a year sprint and yeah. You know, the college season in the summer. So it happens fast, and some guys came on the scene really quick.
And you've made the effort as captain to get to know these guys and play some with them throughout this calendar year so that you have some sense of who might be playing well with one another type of thing going in, right? Or to at least create that camaraderie.
Well, I think that, I think it's important to listen to them. I think it's important to get to know them as much as possible for me, and showing up, whether it's some college events or national championships or even the summer events through the course of the year with all the summer majors that go on with the amateur schedule. I think it's important to get to know them, watch them, know their games. But I think you have to listen too. Half the events alternate shot. You want to put them with people that they have some familiarity with, that might play the same ball, that they know, that they get along with, that they can bond and basically kind of go in and kind of bond together, in a tough environment to play in. So I think you want to listen to your players. So I think it's kind of all the above. So I've got to know the guys and listened, and we got some text chains and everything. So I think communicating with the guys, we have some possible lineups that when we hit the ground running over there, we might feel good about.
I was very fortunate, was director of communications for the PGA of America for a dozen years. So I spent a lot of time in the sort of the Ryder Cup circles and got to understand the very, intense passion for the Ryder Cup. And you see some of that with the President's Cup as well. For our listeners who may not be as familiar with the Walker Cup, which predates the Ryder Cup. I mean, the very first Walker Cup was played in 1922. I wonder if you could give a sense of what the Walker Cup means to you, Nathan Smith, as a competitor and a captain, and what it means to the amateur game in general.
Wow. Well, you mentioned that with 1922 and different things, and there's some legendary names on there that kind of started all this. But I think that the Walker Cup is the pinnacle of amateur golf. I think that for guys, and I think it's twofold. I think there are guys that are longtime career amateurs that that it's a highlight for them, and it is, it's not even like a stepping stone, but it's a highlight of their career. It's the highest point in amateur golf, basically, you can make to represent your country. And then you look at guys that have, anybody from Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, Jordan Spieth, anybody, Rory or Ricky, anybody, they've gone to that next level. And I think it's a celebration of them, of their amateur career, and maybe a stepping stone to the next level. But the Walker Cup is the pinnacle of amateur golf. And I think it's one of the coolest sporting events in the world, not only even to watch, but to go to. I mean, you have all these iconic venues, here and overseas. And it's amazing. The crowds can walk up the fairway, get close to the players. You're playing for your country. It's a unique format with alternate shot and then singles, and you kind of have it all. And it's really special. It's a fraternity on both sides with GBI and the USA, of guys that you get to know, and friendships for life. But I think also the alumni of it all, like I think you see it on both sides, that guys that made teams go, they're part of it, they want to watch, they go over, let's see, over to Ireland. There are a lot of guys I know, they're going to go over there, we're going to go over, cheer you guys on, we're going to play, and both sides are doing that, and vice versa. They did that last year at Cyprus, and I think it's just an incredible celebration of golf. But it's really the pinnacle of amateur golf, and a celebration of the game. And I know for even maybe Dean and myself, it's the biggest honor of a lifetime to be a captain, not only to make it, but there's not a ton of captains. To be asked to be a captain of the United States Walker Cup team is one of the biggest honors of your life. It's really, really emotional.
When you got that call initially, speaking of those emotions, what was that like for the United States Golf Association to call you and say, "Hey, we want you to be the captain of our team at Cyprus"?
Well, you say yes, you immediately say yes, cash the lottery ticket immediately. And I think for myself, it was unique. It was about, a good 8 or 9 years ago. And they kind of, and it's unique because, kind of there's a flow of captains, and you can see people down the line and who they might be. And I think that there was a string of, with captains where it's like you're going to be a little bit older. And then I think they asked me if when I wanted to do it, and how I wanted to do that. And I honestly said, I'd like to do it maybe when I'm a little younger. First of all, I might be alive you know, my parents might be allowed to enjoy it.
Yeah,
So, I
right.
mean, I think it's one of those, and I think I could relate a little better to the guys, be a little more energetic traveling around and watching them, and be able to bond with them a little more when you're younger. And like I said, a lot of people can be around to enjoy it rather than years from now, and they might not be. So it worked out, and then years later, you got the call. Just kind of the stars aligned, and absolutely all in. I'll take it. Door number one, I'll take it.
Absolutely. And I mentioned about this being played in consecutive years now. You have a full-time job in insurance sales, and I'm wondering, was there any hesitancy on your part to ramp right back up again a year later and be the captain again?
I should probably hesitate on that, but I'm going to say no. No, I work with a lot of great people, you know, at USI and everything. So they've got my back. We got a great team there and everything. But you know, I think that no, absolutely not. So it's a lot. It's a lot to go back to back. I think at some point we were teasing that you almost felt like you were a kind of like a college, football coach or something. Right after, you know, let's say the championships, you got to go back on the recruiting trail again. And next week,
Yes, right.
all of putting that inter squad team together again and seeing the guys, and immediately there was really no downtime right after you did it. It's like, hey, we're back to it. We got to put together this, you know, inter squad and what guys, and then you have to talk to guys, you know, who's going to probably turn pro, and are you in, are you out? And that's unique because, you know, some of them were not sure at the time. So, and you're trying to put the squad together. So it's pretty intensive, and there's so many great players out there. So that's always tough to get the right guys and everything. So, we tried our best.
Nathan Smith, the captain of the U.S. Walker Cup team that will head over to Lahinch Golf Club in Ireland to defend, not to defend, but to try to win the Walker Cup for the sixth consecutive time. You know, I mentioned earlier about a President's Cup and Ryder Cup. President's Cup is a 4-day event. The Ryder Cup is a 3-day event. I've always been kind of intrigued and fascinated by the Walker Cup. It's a 2-day event. I mean, you mentioned earlier about a sprint versus a marathon. I mean, it seems to me whenever you've got a 2-day event, Nathan, you kind of get off to a good start, don't you? Is there some inherent pressure built in of, boy, we've only got only so many days and so many matches?
Sure. Well, it's so much fun. I'd love to make it a month-long event if we could just go over there and just do it all month. That'd be great if we could, you know, but that'd be so much fun. It goes fast. Sure, it goes fast. And I think that's important. You know, maybe it's something we struggled on too with alternate shot. They're so good at alternate shot. Look at that in the Ryder Cup. And you know, even throughout the Walker Cup, how good they are with that. But it's out of the gate. You need to come out ready to play because you're really, you know, fighting back. I know that happened to us even last year. We're down out of the gate. We're down 3-1, and then you have to claw back, and then it just builds and builds. So, no, it's very important to get off to a fast start and just hang in there with them. So we'll be trying.
Are you a different captain in some ways from last year to this year? Did you learn? You have to have learned some things going through the rigors of actually being the captain, that you've applied to this year.
Well, you can be. I mean, I think I'll find out. I think the overall, you know, mission statement and theme is the same of what you're trying to do and schedule the week and different things like that. But I think that, you know, and I'm not going to say, you know, I'm not going to sound like whatever, but I think that whether it's coaching or being a captain, you have to adapt with your players. I think that you can't really be a cookie cutter coach or captain. I think you have to know the player. I think you have to know what they need. I think you have to be attuned to their needs of who they want to play with, what rest do they need, what food, who they want around them, how many reps do they need practice, what motivates them. Some guys, you leave alone, they're in their zone. You know, other guys, you can push them a little bit, talk to them a little bit, fire them up a little bit. And so you need to understand what type of team you have. I think that last year's squad, I think, was really all the credit to them. I think I was very active in the morning and afternoon session, trying to get them to hang in there and being a little more vocal but calm. And then literally all the credit to them on Sunday. I literally felt like Gene Hackman and Hoosiers, where I just sat down on the bench and just watched it. And they were, again, all the credit to them. They played absolutely incredible golf. And I literally just sat back, and I almost was, it was almost going so well that I almost didn't want to say, and it all was basically like, do you need an Uncrustable with the turn? Because we're, you know, it's going well. But, you know, I mean, it just depends on the guys and what they need. And, but I think overall, the logistics and what you're trying to do and the structure of the week is the same. But as far as being a captain, I think it depends on your player. And I think I got a good beat on the guys, individually and collectively as a team.
You played in three Walker Cups. You won two of the three that you played in. And you were an older guy, relatively speaking, when you were on a team with, say, a Jordan Spieth. And I'm wondering now, when you've got a guy like Stewart Hagestad, who's 5 for 5 in his previous Walker Cups, he's never lost, 35-year-old guy. Then you've got high school kids that are on the same team. How do you figure out who plays with who, and do you have those decisions ready for the foursomes matches that are what, Saturday morning and Sunday morning? I believe that's correct.
Sure. Yeah.
How
Saturday and
do
Sunday.
you have those? Are those determined, or at least the Saturday morning ones determined well in advance, or is it like a Friday, we're nailing this down the day before?
So you kind of have to, you have to turn them in, you know, at a certain time, you know, the day before. And I guess that was, it was interesting because then, you know, you had to get them kind of in the afternoon, Saturday afternoon, you had to put them in for Sunday morning. So I think that it'd be ideal to watch, you know, all of the play and then be able to do that. But you need to be able to do that, you know, as play is somewhat kind of going on and have that ahead of time just so they can schedule it, even with the afternoon single session. So there's a lot of filling out on the fly, even sometimes as play is going on. But, you know, I think that we kind of have those, we have an idea of kind of who wants to play. I mean, I think I've talked with each player and, I think that's again what makes the Walker Cup extremely unique is that you have, you know, maybe a mid-am on your team, and yet you have some guys in high school, and they're going to bond and be on a team and have a collective goal together. And it's really unique even to get on that bus. And I think that's the celebration of, you know, even the Walker Cup and the event itself. So it's fun, but again, you got to listen to the guys and who they're feeling. And there's certain things where it's like the ball type could be a big thing. If they grew up together, if they play, if the shot shape, if they're have some familiarity playing with each other, possibly in a Palmer Cup or different things, or college that they might go to, or different things like that. So, you know, and that's the thing. You want to have them have some familiarity with each other and be able to get along because, you know, it's kind of they get out there, it's them versus the world.
I want to talk a little bit about your playing career. You didn't play collegiately at the University of Texas. You didn't play at Arizona. You played at a Division III school not far from your home outside of Pittsburgh at Allegheny College. You had great success, what, four-time All-American. You were a two-time academic All-American. Can you talk a little bit about playing at Allegheny College and what that meant to you? Before we went on the air, you said, well, at a minimum, you knew you had an opportunity to play right away, right? So you knew you were going to compete. And how soon did you start to realize, man, I could compete well beyond maybe the Division III level?
Well, it's funny. I did get some nice offers from some schools. I didn't get them from those schools that you mentioned, but I did get some really, really nice offers that looking back, you know, but I think when you're that age, I don't think I was just ready to go. It's unique being in PA and the way the winters are. And I don't think I knew any different, you know, in your high school, because I just played basketball all winter. I played all different types of sports and my flow is kind of like, you know, you played hoops all winter, and then you played baseball in the spring and early summer, and then you played golf, you know, kind of through that, and then maybe even some football in the fall. So I was on this, you know, not, you know, let's go to Florida. And I didn't really know what the winters, you know, I didn't know any different. And I don't think I was ready to go away from home. I don't think I was ready to do that. But I think that Allegheny for me, it was, and I knew some of the guys up there. They were good friends, and we had a really nice team. We could never beat Methodist, you know, the national championships. I feel like we'd go to these events and we'd shoot, we'd shoot a really good score, and then they'd come in with some
Nothing
crazy low score. They'd be like 30 under as a team or something. We were like, did they have five guys? Like, were they playing the same course as us?
Yeah.
But it was fun. We had a great team, and I think for me, going in and being in a good situation and having fun with guys and just getting better for 4 years, where I could go in and play. It wasn't a situation where I'm going to go in a red shirt, then even maybe
Yeah.
my senior year, they might bring people in. You might not play. I played for 4 years. I got a lot better, and I fell more and more in love with the game. And we had a nice team, and it worked out. And that was kind of my path. I just really probably wasn't ready to go to a big school down south or out west. So I did have some offers, but it just, at that time in my life, I was just a kid from Brookville.
Yeah.
I didn't know any different. That was a big, that would have been a big, that would have been like going to the moon for me. So wasn't ready for that.
Yeah, and I can relate to that. I grew up in the DC area. My father was the golf professional for many years at Burning Tree Club outside of DC. And I couldn't, for me as a 19-year-old, I ended up going to the University of Richmond. So it was a 2-hour drive.
Sure,
It's
sure.
somewhat similar, right? I didn't have the prowess that you had playing golf, but it is a different phases of our life where we make decisions, and it clearly worked out for you.
Yeah, I was close with my family. I think that I had a teacher at the time that I was still great friends with, still teaches me there with Don Sargent, and he was at Oakmont at the time, and I was really working a lot with him, and I didn't really want to just completely bail and on that. I don't know. It seemed like I had a nice flow around the area, and it wasn't too far away, and it was close enough. And I wasn't ready to just kind of leave and come back Thanksgiving and Christmas. Like I said, I was just it was a really small town, really small high school, and like I said, that would have been like going to the moon. Some of those big campuses are pretty intimidating. I wasn't quite ready for that. So it worked out. It worked out. But looking back at it, it's like, wow, okay. But it really made sense at the time. And yeah, still a lot of great friends. And this is a great school. It was a great experience.
Nathan, as you well know, the U.S. Mid-Amateur is for male golfers 25 and over. And in 2003, you won it at age 25. I believe you were the youngest to ever win it. You won it 4 times. What was that like to be able to gain a win on a national level at such a prestigious event for your confidence? And did you ever think, yeah, you're 25 at that point, did you ever consider turning professional?
Well, I was curious. I did try Q school as an amateur. I think the following year or two, just in the fall, just as an amateur, just to try it. And
Try it, sure.
I did okay. I kind of at the time, the status wasn't anything to whatever, but I did try it. I actually did pretty well. But yeah, just I don't know. That was always my path. I went to Allegheny and I got my MBA in finance. After that, and being from PA, I guess if you grew up in Florida, California, maybe would have been a different path, but that just seemed to be my path with amateur golf. And I just enjoyed it. I just loved to play amateur golf, and it seemed all of a sudden then one thing would lead to another, like, oh, the mid-am leads to the Masters in the spring, and then, oh, can I make the Walker Cup team in the fall? And all of a sudden I kind of got
Yeah.
on this snowball that I never even really thought about. Pro golf, I was having kind of so much fun, and I guess I shouldn't say that because I did try Q school, but it was fun. And I think when I won that mid-am in 2003, I think I was glad I could take advantage because I just turned 25, so you want to get it while you're young there.
Yeah.
But I didn't really realize what that meant as far as I think I was pretty young and naive, and you're just thank goodness that you didn't know what that might lead to, or I probably never would have won it. You didn't really know all of a sudden it's in the Masters and this and that, and you're in all these national amateur tournaments, and maybe all of a sudden you're on the Walker Cup scene, and you're kind of on a watch list for that. So it opened up a lot of doors and a lot of experiences. And I think even winning that and going to the Masters at 25 to see a
Yeah.
lot of those guys, and it was cool too, because a lot of those guys were younger and kind of my age, and I knew them. And I think I would say I learned so much even seeing that. I mean, anytime you can even go and get close to those guys for a good week at Augusta, some of the best players in the world. I can't tell you how much I learned, how they went about it, and some of the training aids and some of the teachers and different things and what they did. And it was in friendships I started to make. So it was really helpful from a confidence, and it really fueled me to kind of want to get back there and do some of
Yeah.
that other stuff. So it was extremely helpful and beneficial at that age.
As you said, those four victories earned you a spot into the Masters. The 2004 Masters was significant because it was Mr. Palmer's final Masters. Two-part question. First of all, that and it was your first Masters. Number one, what's it like? What's the feeling like standing on the first tee at Augusta National Golf Club on Thursday, hearing your name announced that you're going to be teeing off of the Masters? And then please tell the story about playing with Mr. Palmer in what turned out to be his final round at Augusta.
Well, even I think teeing off in a Walker Cup, or let alone, let's say a Ryder Cup or President's Cup, it's a feeling like you don't have before. So I think the one thing that's amazing about Augusta is they bring you through. It almost feels like you're going into the Gladiator Dome. The cop brings you in through the crowd, and it's like you're going into, the Coliseum or something on the first tee, and all of a sudden everything parts and you've got 10,000 people on top of you.
It's true,
And it's
yeah.
amazing to be there when the crowds aren't there, because the tee is really kind of out there in the middle of nowhere, and it's amazing that all the people there, and they just pack it in and there's no room. It's really a feeling that you don't really, have in anything, and you almost can't even feel your arms at the time. You're kind of like floating, and you're like, well, wait a minute, is the club? Am I taking the club back? I'm gonna swing. Should I guide it, or should I swing as hard as I can? The Masters scoreboard's over the right. What if I toe? Did a shank one over there and hit the board. I mean, you have all these feelings. It's just people. And it's amazing too, when people are right there, when you have 10,000 people kind of right there. The funny thing is when you're playing, you can hear everything everybody's saying. So you can hear everything from, what's he doing with his grips? Hey, he looks like a heavier Rory McIlroy. He looks like, I've heard it all. I mean, it's unbelievable about the thing that you hear, and you hear everything everybody says. So it's kind of wild. But it feels like you're just floating, and it's a feeling that you don't have. And so, first of all, you're nervous with that. And then it's really funny, and it's the honor of a lifetime to be paired with, Arnold Palmer, his last Masters. We played at a friend of ours, because I was, I'm from Pittsburgh, set us up in a practice round on Tuesday. And it was actually Arnold Palmer, Fred Ridley, who's now the chairman, and he was going to go play in the par three, because that's how he was a U.S. amateur champ. He would always play in the par three along with the British amateur champ. And so we were going to play on Tuesday, and then so we played. We had a great, fun day, a little skins game, and then later that day, it comes out on the Golf Channel that, oh, it's Nathan Smith and then Bob Estes are going to play with Arnold Palmer in his last. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, you got to be kidding me. So I didn't expect that at all. So that was a lot. And so I don't think I slept for a few days. So that was a
Did
lot.
you talk with Mr. Palmer? Did he spend some time with you? What was it like being on that golf course with him in his final hurrah?
Well, we talked a lot on Tuesday in our practice round, and he told me some amazing stories about every hole. And that's a uniqueness of the Masters, right? And maybe a major or a course that has, something every year. And you see
Sure.
that it's, obviously 16 and different things, and Jack's putt on 17, and Tiger's chip in on 16, and all this, all these things, the Larry Mice chip in. So every hole has a story, has a memory for everybody. And then, for Arnold Palmer, he was telling stories about every hole. Like, he hit this shot here, and this, 19, what, and this was big, and this helped him win. So it was amazing to go around and him almost to narrate what every hole and shots they hit. Now, Thursday came, and it was wild. I mean, so it was his last master. So literally, like, the whole club was, all the patrons were descended on him. And so that was really special. That was a lot. So honestly, it was so loud because they were just cheering for him walking up the fairway, hitting a shot, his grandson Sam picking up the bag for him, the caddy. So it was wild. So we would, if we talked, we would literally have to, and we talked a little bit, but I mean, it was so loud. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot to walk into. And I'd say being in that atmosphere, there's nothing else, like I said, besides possibly, I guess, Ryder Cup or, I mean, being in that for me was like, then really any situation I was in from now on didn't feel like that, because it almost felt like you're at a SEC football game. It was like 50 deep everywhere. So
It's crazy.
it was wild, especially that second day coming up, on that backside.
Yeah. And I have to imagine you and Bob Estes realized walking up that steep incline on 18 that the two of you needed to step over to the side and let Mr. Palmer receive the greeting that he'd
We
long
did. We did.
richly
We're trying
deserved.
to, yeah, we're trying to just, we knew the cameras weren't there for us, so we knew we were trying to exit stage left the best we could do.
Hey, a few more Walker Cup questions for you. What do you remember? Your first Walker Cup was at Marion in 2009. I know that you and Peter Uihlein formed a formidable duo. You won both of your foursomes matches. What's that like to hear the national anthem play, to see the flag go up, and for that to be on the first tee of a Walker Cup?
Well, that was special. You mentioned Peter. I think anytime you can think back of a partner that you had in a Walker Cup, it's almost like you're kind of bonded for life. So there's something about that. And yeah, I was fortunate enough. Peter was playing some incredible golf, and I just remember kind of maybe in the alternate shot portion, maybe I wanted to play the evens a little better so he could have that first tee shot off one. I didn't want any parts
Yeah.
of that. We'll give the college, ace the shot off the first tee. But I think there's an incredible bond for life. I'll love Peter for forever, and he's an incredible player and guy and friend. And that was special being with him. But we were lucky enough. He just played incredible. I was along for the ride there. But I think that, hearing that music when that flag goes up, it's an exceptional, acknowledgement of pride making the team, acknowledgement for your country, really, gratitude for everything in your life and being in that moment and family that can be there. And it's even more so than when you're a captain and you're putting that flag up. I mean, that's really emotional stuff when you're lifting that flag and, trying not to screw it up, trying not to untie it, everything, and just not in your it's a funny story last year because I there's a it's almost like sometimes walking down the aisle, you don't want to go too fast. You're trying to sing, happy birthday or count to 30 seconds or something like that. You don't want to go too fast, and you just want to make sure you untie it. And there's a lot that goes into that when the world's watching. There's a lot more pressure than you think. And even last year, I thought we had everything under control, and then I had to untie it. I wasn't quite ready for this, so it's like, oh boy, here we go. So there's a lot that goes into it. It's a very emotional moment for that to go up there, in a sense of pride for your country.
We're on our final holes with Nathan Smith, the 2026 U.S. Walker Cup captain. They're headed to Lahinch Golf Club in Ireland for the 51st playing of the Walker Cup. I want to ask about Lahinch in a minute. I know you played for two captains, Buddy Marucci and Jim Holtgreave, and I'm wondering what were they like as captains? And a buddy of mine, guy Matt Chagrou, an outstanding senior amateur player, reached out to Matt. He said, "Ask Nathan, about those night before competition speeches. Did either of those captains give you the kind of or any rah-rah speeches? And what was your approach last year in terms of what you communicated to your team on the eve of both days?"
Well, they're both incredible captains and played for both of them and won with both of them. And they're different people. And I think, Jim Holgraves is very, very, very passionate. Very passionate. Wears it all on his sleeve. Emotional. and very emotional guy. Buddy, gentleman, plotter, kind of quieter in the approach and everything, with confidence and everything. So I think, I think you learned a lot from both of them. And I know Jim was very emotional, the night before, in our pregame, if you will, Friday night. And then, Buddy
Sure.
was more calm. We just kind of had a dinner and everything, and I think he knew the guys were ready and everything. Yeah, I might have given a little speech last year. I don't know. The guys needled me up a little bit to give a little speech, and I might have gave him a little something. I don't know how good it was, because we came out, we were down 3-1 in the morning session the next morning, but I tried to give him all I had. I think when you're a captain or a coach, you gotta just, that's your job, is gotta read the room. You gotta give them all the ammo they have to go out there and play. And I felt like they needed some of that. They liked it. They liked it. It was good. It fired them up. So, but it was fun. I know that other captains have brought guys in the night before, but I did it myself, and I just had a couple of swigs of something, and here we go. Let's cut it loose,
I
So
love it. Love it.
it was a great group of guys.
Couple of questions left with Nathan Smith. I'm a little bit pleased about Lahinch Golf Club. It's certainly a very renowned club. Heavy rough, narrow fairways. What are we looking at? What's the premium for playing that golf course well?
Well, I think it's all the above. I mean, I think it's just a championship golf course where I think you've got, like I said, the iconic, kind of blind par three and everything there, which is an iconic hole. I think there are some holes where you need 230 to 250 off the tee, maybe some stinger shots, but then there's some other holes that length will reward you on those longer holes. There's some wispy, high grass or fescue. You got to keep it on the short and narrow. I think there's some dog leg, a lot of dog leg lefts, where I think the wind's going to come off the left and kind of blow the ball a little bit to the right. And then, I think with the wind, you got to have laser irons. You got to control the flight of your iron shots. And so a little bit of, you're going to have a little bit of everything over there to play well. And I know we're going to have to do all that, but it's a major championship course, and you're going to need the full bag over there.
Final question about, again, about pairings. I mentioned about Stewart Hagestad and the experience he brings. You've got a couple of really talented players in Jay Lang Jr., who just reached the U.S. Amateur Final, Miles Russell, who was the runner-up in 2025. Obviously, you had Jackson Koivun on the team last year, and we've seen what's happened to him in a very short period of time on the PGA Tour. You've got some really good players on your side.
Well, we do. I know they do too. You got the top 20, basically, amateurs in the world. And I think that's what's fun about it. As we talked earlier, you don't know what, is going to happen, with these guys and go forward. I think even like GBI, you can see and what happened with the GBI and Ryder Cup. In the Europeans, I think it's just a conveyor belt of major champions. It's fun to watch them ascend to the next level. And you mentioned some of the players through the years on the US team and GBI team, but that go on to better things, and be major winners on the tour and different things. But I think that there's some guys that it'll be fun to watch them mature at the next level. And they're still young, they're still getting better. And on both sides, I think that's what's fun about it, that you can just look back and be able to know you spent a lot of time with these
Yeah.
guys and watch them grow and kind of blossom as, people and players.
What will be the keys to success for this team coming up on September 5 and 6? What will be the things that you need to do that you have to do to raise that Walker Cup again?
Well, we really have our hands full with the team over there. I think, we're gonna have to play well in our own shot. Iron shot's always a big thing. If you look at, the Walker Cup or Ryder Cup, I think that's something that, they always bond in that, different things. We're going to have to play well in that format, and then hopefully, play well as in singles. But I think the biggest thing is we just need to get a lot of our pairings down and feel comfortable with each other, learn the golf course, and really play hard and be there for each other. Because I think when you go over, kind of on the road like this, the team's got to be tight. You got to bond, and you got to be there for each other, and you got to support each other. So, hopefully, if we do all those things, we'll see what happens, and we can hang with them.
Nathan, final question. It's a variance of a question that I typically ask to close out the interviews. And that question is, who would be three people who you'd play with in like a dream foursome, and where would you go play? So it's a little bit different. Who would be for you? Who would be three U.S. Walker Cup captains, whether they're living or deceased,
No,
who you'd like to tee it up with in a kind of a magical round of golf, and where would you go play?
Oh my. Wow. Wow, this is tough. You're gonna get me in trouble for that. I'm glad you at least said like Walker Cup captains, because whenever I ask this, and I think I get in trouble with people, that I didn't say them.
Of
But
course. Yeah.
I think that, wow, that's a tough one. I'll keep it simple. I mean, I have to take Buddy Marucci and Jim Holgraves because they're my captains.
Sure.
I might leave them at the turn and make them no, but anyway, no, I'm just kidding. And of course, I think I'd go with Fred Riley as our fourth there. So there's so many great
Strong.
people from the past, but I think that those are guys that that'd be fun. And I've spent a lot of time with them in the last, how many years and everything. But you got me in trouble, I'm sure, got me in trouble probably with a lot of people. So we'll see.
Have a great week in Ireland. Thank you so much, Captain Nathan Smith, for joining us here on Musings on Golf. It's been a blast, and very, very best of luck looking to raise that Walker Cup again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Love the show. Appreciate it. All the best.
Well, we thank Captain Nathan Smith for his time here on Musings on Golf, and certainly wish him and his 10-man team the very, very best at Lahinch this weekend in Ireland. Again, I have a feeling they're going to win, but I think it's going to be a little bit tighter than it was last year at Cypress Point. Next week, as the NFL season dawns, we will be joined by former wide receiver in the National Football League, Adam Thielen. Adam played for 13 years, mostly with the Minnesota Vikings, also with the Carolina Panthers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. He is an avid golfer, and Adam started to dabble a little bit in media, having done a little work for ESPN and NFL Network. Adam Thielen next week. This weekend, please enjoy the Walker Cup. Please enjoy the long Labor Day weekend. Get out and play some golf if you can. I am playing in a scramble event on Labor Day, which is a big, big deal, and hopefully our team can prevail. Thanks again for joining us for Jenniself, the Dean, who hits all the right buttons and makes me at least sound good. I can't look good. Kelly Elbin signing off and thanking you for joining us on Musings on Golf.